For example, we're moving sailors from desk jobs to the pier. About 2,000 sailors are going back to the piers just to do maintenance and things like that that have been suffering in the past. For the Marines, they're coming down from 202,000 to 182,100. But if you look at the composition of the Marine Corps that will be there in 4 years, it's going to be a different composition. We're going to have more people in cyber, more people in special operations, more people in special operation enablers and things like that. So we are looking at the mix. And some of our new ships, LCS has a core crew of 40. And even with the weapon systems crew, you get up to about 75 or 80. The DDGs, are under 300 now. DDG 1000 has a crew of about 250. And so, as technology changes, as technology improves, the ship I was on 40 years ago, you needed a sailor to turn every valve to do everything manually. You just don't need that now. And so that's, I'll use the coin analogy again, that's one side of that coin. The other side, though, is that those sailors that we do have to be really good at what they do, and they have to be really versatile in the number of things they're able to do.
Acquisition is a big issue that's been talked about on and on again. How are you guys, especially the Navy, protecting that acquisition workforce? Because that was a huge cut in the 90s that you guys are still really suffering from now.
Right, and we have been rebuilding the acquisition workforce. We've hired significant numbers of new acquisition professionals, and it's one of the exceptions we've made to bringing people in. Is the acquisition workforce. In all, when we're through, we're going to bring in about 5,000 acquisition professionals. We're over halfway there.
Are you doing anything specific to protect them, though, as well? I mean, beyond not reduce, because it seems like the training that gets cut, the idea that you can, if you're looking to build ships better and reduce costs, that's an acquisition workforce function in many ways, too, making sure that the contracts are set up the right way.
Well, I mean, look at our budget. That's what we're doing to protect it. As I said, it's an exception to when we did a civilian hiring freeze. There was an exception for the acquisition workforce. And what you pointed out was what happened in the 90s was our acquisition workforce got drawn down, and so you had one private company overseeing the activities of another private company. Nothing sort of inherently wrong with that, but there was nobody protecting Navy equities and the taxpayers' equities. And I think that bringing this acquisition workforce back into the Navy and so that they have one goal, and that is protecting the Navy, and by doing that, the American taxpayer, is a way better way to go. And so we're going to make sure that we have the acquisition professionals that we need.
I also caught up with Air Force Service Acquisition Executive David Van Buren, who's about to retire. He says the Air Force is on a good track.
Very confident in the team's ability to execute and to articulate if there are programs where the contractors are not executing. And that's what I'm saying. The analysts or whatever, the reporters, need to focus more on industrial execution, right? Decisions were made in large part because industry didn't execute.
One of the things that you, and we're hearing again and again at this conference, is telling industry, you got to be more affordable, you got to be better, you can't fail. This is not new. I mean, this is not, this is something that I've been covering this area for 12, 13 years. Why is the budget the only reason why you guys are stressing this more than ever? Or is it?
We were doing this, and it was called the efficiency movement. And we were doing that as a part of the actions required for the 12 budget. And so, we've been working on this pretty hard for 2 or 3 years. And that is when you have such a large ramp up in the overall budget, you sometimes find inefficiencies. And it's important to always look at that and find out what you can do with that.
But I guess my feeling is what you guys are saying now is no different than what you've been saying in the last decade plus. And how do, if I'm in the industry, I'm going to sit here and go, okay, you're saying this again. Is the difference now the budget and the fact is that you guys have terminated programs, or why is this message different than previous?
10 years ago, were you using the techniques like should cost? Were you using reductions in overall work scope? Were you looking at an 80% rule or whatever it was in requirements trades? I don't think you were.
Well, I know that you guys, DOD especially, was looking at performance-based contracting, was looking at modular contracting, was looking at the idea of...
I can tell you, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means.
Why don't you know what it means?
Well, number one, I wasn't in the aerospace industry then. Number two, I don't know what it resulted in now.
Obviously, it resulted in problems. I mean, a lot of overcost, overruns. And that's why I guess I'm trying to understand more a little bit, because this is obviously a big message to industry. You guys are saying not just here, but
type
at other
type of contract. And that is when I came in and I looked at the GAO report, and I get a lot out of the GAO reports. You know, I'd like two or three guys who do that, Mr. Sullivan. They're really fine people. I learned from them. And I went through and I analyzed the cost overruns in 2008 the Air Force programs, and I plotted the EAC growth versus the Class 1 ECP growth. What it was the constructive change, right? And there was almost no constructive change. So it wasn't the supercilious nature of the requirements people that were vacillating and change requirements. It wasn't that at all. It was the type of contract. It was a cost plus fixed fee and a cost plus award fee in almost every case that didn't properly incentivize the contractor to go through those cost trades and the execution of the contract, right? So you got to do it. You got to do it in the context of what is that better buying power, that buying relation PEO.
How's the Air Force ensuring not making the same mistake made in the 90s when the last drawdown happened and the cuts happened, that you overcut in the acquisition workforce, a lot of people say? How are you guys making sure that doesn't happen again?
I think there's a lot of focus on, a lot of attention. Now that the numbers are pretty stable, it is into the competency level. And I think the real focus should be on the competency level. There's plenty enough people. Let's focus on getting them training, giving them all the skill set to balance their God-given capabilities.
And you guys are doing that through not just the Defense Acquisition University, but other training processes?
Yeah, we have our own internal training activities that are going on. You know, we have our own human resource leader in our air staff who's working that issue.